And welcome to the National Radio Club's DX audio service for November 2005. This is issue number 248, and I'm Fred Vobey, the publisher of the DX audio service. My address is 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805-1835. If you live in the United States of America or Canada and would like to become a member of the DX audio service, the cost of a subscription is $28. To Europe and elsewhere, it's $40. Those prices are also the renewal rates. Tapes are sent via first-class mail, and you keep your cassettes. If you'd like to subscribe, make your check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address that I just mentioned, or simply log on to our website at www.nrcdxas.org and look for the Join Us link at the top right side of the page, and you can sign up using our PayPal credit card system. Before we get into Bill Hale's column, I just want to mention some new phone numbers, my email status, and tell you a little bit about a problem we had recently, which kind of affects the production of the magazine. Please, if you ever wish to call or send me an email, please pay attention to what I'm about to say. The new DX Audio Service office number is 360-382-1957. That's 360-382-1957. If you're calling just to muse and just wish to contact the musings number and put your information on, it's 360-469-0189. That's 360-469-0189. You can now call the old telephone number of area code 419-228-6223, but you have to go through a phone tree in order to find the area that you wish to access. They're not direct numbers. Same with the area code 419-516-4470, which is my transmitter shack. You have to go through the phone tree and either select me or the musings or whatever you want to listen to. Now, as I mentioned a few issues back, the old musings number of 419-224-1609 is gone. I would suggest that anyone trying to call that take that out of their address book, because pretty soon that number will probably be reassigned to somebody else here in Lima, and they're not going to be too happy if you call them up in the middle of the night and wake them up to muse. So is the fax number. That's gone too. And soon my email address will also be history. The reason I've been getting away from email is because it's proving to be too unreliable and too unproductive. If you need to contact me, please use my telephone numbers or just drop a card or a letter to the address that I mentioned at the beginning of the tape. Also, a quick note to DX Audio Service members about a problem we had here recently. We had another transformer explosion in our neighborhood, and this one damaged a lot of our equipment here in the studio. The most serious issue that we had was that it completely killed several computers, including the one that we're using to master the All Radio series, and that's the one we were going to release this month. In addition to the cost of the equipment, which was well over $16,900, we lost all the time and effort that we put into those interviews that we had recorded from people who talked on subjects from digital radio to propagation to quality. You can imagine the pain of losing all this great stuff, folks, but we'll get over it and just have to start again all the way from the beginning. Meanwhile, I'm slowly getting things repaired and replaced so we can keep cranking out issues, so please be patient. We're not happy with the situation either, but that's the best we can do. Now here's Bill Hale with a look at the AM switch.
Well, thanks again, Fred, and welcome to AM Switch for the DX Audio Service for November 2005. First off, in our report last month, we had an item stating that the CRTC had approved the deletion of CFOS 560 Owen Sound, Ontario, since the FM station CFPS-FM Port Elgin had taken to the airwaves. Well, it seems it's CFPS 1490 Port Elgin that's being eliminated, so CFOS 560 remains on the air. We apologize for that error. In happenings this month, first of all, call letter changes. On 610, the legend KFRC San Francisco takes the new call of KEAR. On 730, KSUD in West Memphis, Arkansas changes to KQPN. On 740, WGSM in Huntington, New York changes to WNYH. WNTX 750 in Brookport, Illinois has made the change to WTHQ. On 880, WMDB in Nashville, Tennessee has changed to WNSG. On 910, WKEQ Burnside, Kentucky, their new call is WSFW. They were WLLK for 9 whole days. 970 WRKN in Brandon, Mississippi, their new call WZQK. 1010, a new station in Sauk Rapids, Minnesota, their call is WPPI. 1240 WNSG in Nashville, their new call WNVL. 1340 WPNT in Connellsville, Pennsylvania, has taken the call of WYJK. 1370 WLTC in Gastonia, North Carolina, has changed to WGIV. On 1470, WLVU in Dunedin, Florida, has been reported to take the call of WHBO. In fact, John Bowker reported they're even IDing at that on the hour, but as of the deadline here, the FCC still lists WLVU as that call sign. On 1530, a new station in Agana, Guam, their new call, KVOG. And another new station, this one on 1550 in Bonnell, Florida, their call, WAYI. Also on 1550 in Bristol, Tennessee, WBCV has changed to WIGN. And on 1600, KRRD in Centerville, Utah has changed to KXTA. Construction permits which have taken to the air during the past month on 810, WDMP Dodgeville, Wisconsin. Their CP for 250 watts during the day, 10 watts at night is on the air. They've added that nighttime service. 1110, WOKU in Hurricane, West Virginia. Their CP for D1, that's non-directional during daylight hours only, 1,000 watts. Moving from 1080 is on the air, so you have to move them up in your logs. 1150 WHBY in Kimberly, Wisconsin, program test authority has been granted for U4, 20,000 daytime watts, 25,000 watts at night. They had been having problems with their augmentations used to protect CKX 1150 in Brandon, Manitoba. Now we all know CKX has been deleted for some time, but U.S. stations still must protect those allocations in Canada, just as if the stations were still on. On 1160, WYLL in Chicago, Illinois, the program test authority has been granted for U4, 50,000 watts, day and night. 1230, KSIX in Corpus Christi, Texas, their CP to move to a new 175-foot tower is on the air. They remain U1, 1,000 watts, 24 hours. And on 1570, KSXT in Loveland, Colorado, their CP for U1, 7,000 watts during the day and 18 watts at night, is in the testing mode. Well, grants for new stations on 780. A new station in Pueblo, Colorado has been granted U4, 3,000 watts during the day and 760 watts at night. On 1010, that new station we announced in Sauk Rapids, Minnesota, WPPI, has been granted U4, 1,700 watts during the day and 240 watts at night. A new station on 1230 in Smithville, Georgia, they'll be on with 1,000 watts day and night, non-directional. And also on 1230, Glasgow, Kentucky, they've been granted 750 watts day and night, non-directional. On 1340, a new station in Bend, Oregon, they've been granted 250 watts day and night, non-directional. 1400, Jacksonville, North Carolina, a CP has been granted for 1,000 watts during the day and night, non-directional. On 1450, Charlottesville, Virginia, has been granted a CP for 1,000 watts day and night. On 1460, a new station in Golden Gate, Florida, they've been granted U4, 850 watts during the day and 340 watts at night. And on 1530, that new station in Agana, Guam, KVOG, has been granted 250 watts day and night. Moving on to grants to existing facilities. A station on 1380 right now in Farwell, Texas, they'll be changing to 830, it's KMUL. They've been granted 1,100 watts during the day and 10 watts at night, non-directional. They also have an application in for 50,000 watts during the day, 10 watts at night, plus 16,000 watts during critical hours, which is still pending. On 890, KQLX in Lisbon, North Dakota, has been granted 1,800 watts non-directional, daytime only. 970 WCHN in Norwich, New York, program test authority has been granted for U1, 1,000 watts during the day and 34 watts at night. 1010 KXEN in St. Louis, Missouri, the CP has been granted to change the city of license to St. Louis dropping the Festus designation as they've been for years. 1010 KCPW, Tooele, Utah, has been granted U8, 50,000 watts during the day, 194 watts at night, and 42,000 watts during critical hours. 1030 WONQ, Ovieta, Florida, program test authority has been granted for U2, 45,000 watts during the day, and 1,700 watts at night. 1060 KRCN, Longmont, Colorado, CP has been granted to increase daytime power from a new tower. When operational, KRCN will be 30,000 watts during the day, 111 watts at night, all non-directional. 1150 KCKY in Coolidge, Arizona, they've been granted a CP to change their city of license to Apache Junction, Arizona, while decreasing the nighttime power. Once operational, they'll be U4, 5,000 watts during the day, and 185 watts at night. 1150 KNRV, Englewood, Colorado, CP has been granted for 50,000 watts during the day, 1,000 watts at night, U4. 1230 WVNT, Parkersburg, West Virginia, CP has been granted to decrease power levels to U1, 880 watts, day and night. 1270 WHGS, Hampton, South Carolina, CP has been granted to increase their daytime power to become U1, 10,000 watts during the day and 219 watts at night. KKOL 1300 in Seattle, Washington, a CP has been granted to change their pending construction permit from U4 50,000 50,000 to U4 50,000 47,000 from a new transmitting site. 1410 KWYO Sheridan, Wyoming, a CP has been granted to relocate to a new 240-foot tower and reduce the nighttime power. When operational, KWYO will become U1 5,000 watts during the day and 350 watts at night. 1430 WOWW, Germantown, Tennessee, the CP to consolidate their day and night operations at the former six-tower night site is now on the air. WOWW remains U2, 25,000 watts during the day and night. 1510 KCUV, Littleton, Colorado, Program Test Authority has been granted for U4, 9,500 watts during the day, 25,000 watts at night. KCUV still has a pending application for U4, 50,000 watts during the day, 25,000 at night. Their application for a city of license change to Englewood has been deleted from the FCC database. 1530 KVDW, England, Arkansas, Program Test Authority has been granted for 2,500 watts during the day, nothing at night, and 270 watts during critical hours, all non-directional. And on 1600 WHJB in Bedford, Pennsylvania, the CP has been granted to reduce day and night power levels to be U1, 2,700 watts during the day, 18 watts at night, from the 277-foot tower of commonly owned WBFD 1310. One application for a new station has been received by the FCC. On 750, a new station has been applied for in Hampton, Maine. They apply for 50,000 watts during the day, 10,000 watts at night, directional nighttime only. A couple of applications have been reinstated on 1050 KTBA in Tuba City, Arizona. Going back to the year 2000, they applied to move to 760 kilohertz with 250 watts during the day and 85 watts at night. It had been dismissed, but just now has been reinstated. And on 1080 WNWI in Oaklawn, Illinois, this is a little complicated, so listen closely. Back in 2001, they applied to operate nighttime in a two-step mode. They proposed to operate with 650 watts of nighttime power until WTIC in Hartford, Connecticut, switched to its nighttime directional operation, which is at the Sunset in Dallas, Texas, home of KRLD. WTIC operates non-directional until sunset at Dallas. Therefore, dual protection to WTIC is required. Upon the WTIC switch to nighttime operation, WNWI nighttime power will be increased to 2,600 watts. Both power levels will utilize the same pattern. If granted, I imagine the listing would look something like this, UX, and I don't know what that X will be. We'll have to come up with a new antenna code to accommodate them, but it'll be UX 3,000, 650, and 2,600. That certainly would be a unique situation. So we'll have to wait and see what the FCC does with that one. One license cancellation and call letter deletion this past month, 1060 KOFY in Gilmer, Texas, has been deleted. That KOFY could be a hot set of call letters for a station to grab. Well, odds and ends this month, Canada was on vacation. No reports from up north. They may be tuning up their snow throwers. For some reason, the city of license change for WGLB 1560 from Port Washington, Wisconsin to nearby Elm Grove slipped past the overworked and underpaid AM log staff, so be sure to make that change in your logs. Stations reportedly off the air this past month, and we are not including those stations in the Gulf region. KBRV 790 in Soda Springs, Idaho, WVOV 970 in Danville, Virginia, WHAP 1340 Hopewell, Virginia, and KMHS 1420 Coos Bay, Oregon. Back on WNYH 740 Huntington, New York, KXLX 700 Airway Heights, Washington with a sports format, WGTA 950 Somerville, Georgia, and WALD 1080 Walterboro, South Carolina. Also, KNUV 1190 Tolleson, Arizona with a Spanish news talk format, plus La Bueno Onda 1190 slogans. Also back on, WLUA 1390 Belton, South Carolina, and KEWL 1400 Texarkana, Texas, and they're simulcasting KEWL FM with Oldies. Off for a short period, but now back on, reportedly, KNIF 1020 Roswell, New Mexico. Well, I'd like to thank Sean Axelrod, Perry Crable, Wayne Heinen, Dean McIntyre, and Jerry Starr for information included in AM Switch this month. Well, that's all from here. Time to point the mic toward Florida and check in with John Balker for this month's Travelogue.
Well, thanks very much, Bill Hale, and hello, everybody. Welcome to the Travelogue. Today, we're going to be starting the 940 dial position. Now, 940 is an interesting clear channel because it is a clear channel, but it's administered by the governments of Canada and Mexico. That doesn't mean we don't have any stations in the United States at 940, of course, but in fact, we've got a bunch. Say, before we go any further, I want to thank John Sampson. Hey, you do nice work out there in Minnesota, John. That was a great cassette you sent in for the Travelogue. And we've added it to the collection, of course, all of the cuts you sent in. That's just great. And Mike Lance in Miami, glad to hear from you, too. So thanks to you both. Okay, today we're going to start the Travelogue about 50 miles west of the city of Boston, a little town of Webster, Massachusetts, as we begin the November 2005 DX Audio Service Travelogue. What a
fun force. 940 WGFP Webster,
the Twin Towers of Hot Tub,
1310 WORC Worcester.
I should also add that WORC at 1310, that was part of that ID, they have since switched to a Spanish format with tropical music. Now, you know, down in the southwest corner of Connecticut is Brookfield, Connecticut, and they have a station at 940 on the dial. Now, they're far enough from Montreal, they can operate at night with 4 whole watts. Well, anyway, they have switched from their music format of 1980 that you'll hear here over to ESPN.
I got just about enough time to say that this is WINE Brookfield, and this is WINE FM, Brookfield Anbury Stereo 95.
Well, as we move forward on the Travelogue, with our radios glued to the 940 dial position, we come to the Pittsburgh area market and the little town of Charleroi. Now, back in 1976, when this next recording was made, they were using the MOR format, which meant you could play almost anything.
9 o'clock, this is WESA AM FM Charleroi, Mon Valley Radio for Mon Valley people.
Good morning, I'm Kathy Carestis. It's going to be a beautiful...
Now, before anybody jumps on me, that recording is about 30 years old. 30 years before that, I was very briefly on WCAX in Burlington, Vermont, that was playing MOR. Middle of the road. What it meant was, don't say anything controversial. Just play some nice Frank Sinatra, that sort of thing. Everybody will get along fine. Now, we do have an update on that Charleroi station. It's pretty badly distorted, but bear with it. At least you'll hear the new call sign.
Real country variety.
Hi, Pittsburgh. This is Kenny Chesney.
Hi, this is Leanne Womack.
Hi, Pittsburgh. We're Lone Star.
WOGG, Oliver Uniontown. WFGI, Charleroi.
Now, by the way, Charleroi is running only 250 watts daytime power, and at night they do have 5 watts, bless their hearts. And just to the northwest of the city of Pittsburgh is another 1,000-watt daytimer in Greenville, Pennsylvania. And I sure love their format, which is officially known as Variety.
Variety 107 FM, WEXC, Greenville, Sharon, Youngstown. And AM 940 WGRP, Greenville.
A ruling this morning in the Susan Smith case. She is mentally competent to stand trial.
Well, let's come back mid-state again, near Lancaster, Pennsylvania, to the town of Lebanon, where there's another 1,000-watt station. And once again, by golly, they're running 5 watts at night. And their format, when they were first on the air in the early 1980s, was one of the early versions of talk radio based on programs from the Mutual Broadcasting System. This next brief cut was from 1985.
94, WVLV, Lebanon.
Mutual News.
And we have an update on that ID from 1993.
Playing your favorite country music. Stereo 940. WADB. Lebanon.
Possible federal budget showdown coming. Mutual News, I'm Kurt Henschen in Washington.
Well, over all those years, at least it was good they kept the Mutual Broadcasting System on their side. And now I see that station has switched to gospel music. And if we swing down to the Hampton Roads part of Virginia, we come to yet another 940 station that is in the business of teaching about religion. One other thing. I see we're far enough from Montreal now that we can run 10,000 watts during the daytime hours and over 3,000 watts at night.
You're listening to the station that brings you the words of faith 24 hours a day. 940 WKGM, Smithfield, Norfolk, Virginia Beach. A positive radio group broadcasting station.
Okay, now up in the hills of the Blue Ridge Mountains, just outside Asheville, North Carolina, is a 5,000-watt station with a real spirited country motif in its programming.
Super Country, K94, the station more people listen to. WKYK Burnsville.
CNN Radio News, I'm David Hull. We are awaiting word from Major League Baseball players that they've decided to set a strike deadline.
That was recorded in 1992, by the way. Well, we come next to a city in Georgia that's just an easy day's drive north of Sun City Center, Florida, where I live.
No score. Before we begin the bottom half of the second, let's pause for station identification on the Atlanta Braves radio network.
The Atlanta Braves, the Macon Braves, Georgia Bulldogs, and Mercer Bears. You get all the action here on your sports connection. News Talk 940 WMAZ in Macon.
It'll be Fred McGriff, Ryan Klesko, and Jeff Blauser. Due up for Atlanta here in the bottom half of the second. McGriff hitting .276, six homers. 20.
We were back in Macon in 1997. We tuned to 940 and found they'd changed everything.
Bigger than a jaw. Able to handle it. I don't know. Somebody will have to tell me. I'm Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Now go take on the day.
News Talk 940 is WMWR. We're Macon Warner Robins.
And on our way home from Culpsville at the National Radio Club Convention in September this year, we stopped once again in Macon to hear this at 940.
Your station for Kenny B and Jamie G weekday morning.
Plus Boards, Rush, and Sean Hannity.
News Talk 940.
WMAC Macon.
Now you're listening to Braves Baseball.
That call sign just then was WMAC, not to be confused with WMAZ, which was the call sign of the first one we gave you there. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to cross into the Sunshine State. And we hear now from a charming gal in Chiefland, Florida.
You're tuned to WLQH Chiefland, and it's time for AP Network News.
AP Network News, I'm Chuck Wright. Senator Edward Kennedy, in an extraordinary speech, is trying to set aside questions about whether his flamboyant social life is affecting his performance in the Senate.
And at the southern end of Florida, we have another 50,000-watt paint burner, this recorded by Tony Simon in 2002. Thanks, Tony.
WINZ, Miami, Fort Lauderdale.
South Florida's home for Jim Rome and Randy Rhodes. This is Super Talk.
Super Talk 940.
And just a year ago now, Linda and I were down in Broward County, Florida, to pick up the new call sign at 940.
This is 940 Fox Sports Radio.
South Florida's home for Dan Celio and Jim Rome.
WRFX AM Miami.
We're 940 Fox Sports Radio.
The Heat searching for a way to win. Good afternoon, I'm George Sedano.
Well, we've got to travel all the way over to the state of Mississippi next with our travelogue dials set to 940 kilohertz. And at the Culpsville Convention, I put out a list of all the stations we have on tape from 940 and said, say, if anybody has any comments you'd like to make, please let me know. And for this next station, somebody wrote on the sheet, I think this is the smallest city in the United States with a 50,000-watt station. I wonder if that's true.
This is the station that reaches more people than any other in the state of Mississippi. WCPC, Houston.
Well, okay, we're going to head north now up into Tennessee to find a 5,000-watt Southern Gospel station in the city of Wartburg.
Thank you for listening today, and may the Lord bless you. Join us again Monday through Friday at this time for the Grace Baptist Hour broadcast on WECO AM 940 in Wartburg.
And then in Kentucky, just east of Louisville.
Hometown 1490 and 940 AM, WFKY Frankfort, WCND Shelbyville, the super cool hits of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and the U of L Cardinals.
We continue our travelogue now to state number 22, and that's Ohio. And on the western side of the state, there is a station in a small town, well, a modest city. And here's a recording that was made in 1997 by Fred Vobey.
Award-winning 24-hour news source, News Radio 940. WCIT News time is 6 o'clock.
This is the Total Information Station, serving Western Ohio for more than 30 years. News Radio 940.
WCIT 940.
This is The World Tonight. Good evening, everyone. I'm Christopher Glenn, CBS News.
That's a nice, clean recording by Fred Vobey. Thanks very much, Fred. And here's another recording of that station, updated to about 3 weeks ago. This one is not by Fred Vobey. It's of Fred Vobey.
Right. They have what it takes to make it in the world's most dangerous sport.
Absolutely amazing!
Supercross the Movies, August 19th, only in theaters.
This is ESPN Radio 940 WLJM Lima. This hour of Sports Talk with Koza is driven by the Tom All Family of Dealerships.
Good afternoon, Lima Land. Third hour of Sports Talk with Koza, downtown Lima.
Wow, well, let me ask you, is there any better way to end a travelogue? I guess not. We'll pick up right at this point with the 940 stations to the north and west of Lima, Ohio, next month. Mark Durenberger is waiting in the wings. Now, the segment you're about to hear from Mark is the last of the six-part series that he has assembled and shared with the DX Audio Service listeners on the breakup of the Clear Channels. Mark, it's a remarkable bit of journalism you've done here, and I know I speak for everyone concerned with the audio service, how proud and tickled we are that you were thoughtful enough to share this with us. Thanks so very much, Mark, and we know there's more coming in the future on this and other subjects. For now, I'm very proud to introduce once again Mark Durenberger.
You know, John, I really appreciate your hanging in there for all of this detail for these last months and providing your own perspective. Of course, some 20 years after it all came down, we're aware now of how it all came out and what impact it had on the AM band. But even back then, if you followed the matter, you could place a safe bet that proponents of AM superpower were going to be left out in the cold. And when you watched the public record and what the commissioners were saying, it was equally obvious the remaining 1A channels were going to be broken up. But the game wasn't over just yet. The FCC was determined to provide nighttime radio service to underserved white areas, some way or other, because the so-called monopoly enjoyed by the AM giants was a politically popular target. The unduplicated 12 1A clear channels were the obvious hunting ground for new spectrum. As they went on the defensive in the 1970s, the clear channel broadcasters pulled out all the stops in an educational campaign. The message was that duplicating signals on the clears was a nasty business because such duplication would destroy badly needed radio service, unquote. WSM launched its famous Save the Grand Ole Opry campaign early in 1979 and organized Friends of the Grand Ole Opry. It encouraged listeners to write to their representatives and to the FCC to protest what the group called the gravest threat to the Grand Ole Opry in its history. Some stations even tried an end run of sorts, writing to their ally Commissioner Robert E. Lee, who at this point was chairman of the U.S. delegation to Rio, asking that he protect their 1A frequencies for U.S. superpower operation in the upcoming World Administrative Radio Conference, or WARC. As we said, in the 1975 docket, the FCC asked whether the 12 1A stations would apply for increased power if available. Most respondents told the FCC they would apply for extended power, ranging anywhere from 100,000 to 500,000 watts, and many said they would use directional antennas. Some would stay non-directional. The Clear Channel Broadcasting Service also proposed that, if granted higher power levels, their members would control adjacent channel interference by employing 5 kilohertz low-pass audio filters. Now, where have we heard that recently? Once again, the gentleman from the Hill got involved. Representatives Findlay and Van Dierlen proposed that priority should henceforth be given to local service and that no U.S. AM operation should be authorized more than 50,000 watts. Findlay was being advised by the Daytime Broadcasters Association and actually said on the floor of the House that virtually no one listens to the nighttime skywave signals of clear channel stations anyway, and therefore, daytimers should not have to sign off at sundown to protect them. As the record grew, the FCC issued a further notice of proposed rulemaking at the end of 1978. Judging by the progressive language of the commission and their public comments, it was obvious they were heading toward a final breakup of the clears. Well, in what would be the coup de grace of a 50-year fight, the FCC issued the famous 1980 report and order that assigned a second high-power station on each of the 12 remaining unduplicated 1A channels. It also affirmed the protected service contour for the primary station would be the 50-50 curve, or what's known in the business as a half millivolt skywave contour, in the real world, about a 750-mile radius around the tower. More than 100 new secondary stations would be authorized on these 12 1A clear channels, and there are more coming up every day. The original power limit of 50 kilowatts for the 1A primary stations was cast in stone, thus ending superpower hopes and leaving WLW as the only station in the country ever authorized to operate with more than 50,000 watts. Summarizing the inquiries it published in the late 1970s, the FCC noted it had asked whether any 1A stations would apply for superpower, and they reported that WHO, WBAP, WJR, WWL, WCCO, WSM, and KSL had proposed various power levels from 200 to 500,000 watts. WCCO had proposed 450,000 and associated this with a proposal that all 1A stations be permitted to go up in power to a level 9 times their present power ceilings, or 450,000 watts, across the board. The commissioners, of course, dismissed these applications, announcing that they were inaccurate in representing potential gains in listenership, and they said the applicants didn't provide a plan for the resolution of expected interference problems. So that was that, and nighttime radio would never be the same. Whether or not you agreed with the concept of superpower, the idea of that kind of power definitely had sex appeal.
With increased public reliance on radio for news and information, the Federal Communications Commission has faced new problems as the airways have become crowded, crowded by signals for 4,900 radio stations. One plan calls for retaining only 12 clear channel stations, including WCCO radio. The 12 clear channel radio stations would broadcast not at the 50,000 watts maximum now allowed, but at something much greater. And so, as the first 40 closes, WCCO Radio has applied for a license to develop its services at 750,000 watts to serve better than ever our great Northwest and to reach far beyond to areas where radio service is now limited.
Was the final breakup of the 1A clear channels the right thing for radio? From today's perspective, probably not. In many cases, the new Class 2 stations, at least at first, did serve the public interest in filling some of that wide area coverage expectation of the report and order. That would not have been the case, however, if the commissioners had listened to the daytime broadcasters. The FCC, fortunately, charitably dismissed as impractical, a poorly advised proposal by the daytime broadcasters to double up certain 1A stations onto other 1A channels, thus freeing up a number of clear channels and adding as many as 2,000 new stations to the channels thus vacated. Imagine what that would have sounded like. Well, in closing this decades-long proceeding, the commission reiterated its 1927 Federal Radio Commission criteria for allocations, which still hadn't been updated to acknowledge FM service. The famous three-legged stool criteria were and are at least one service to everyone, service to as many persons from as many diversified sources as possible, and outlets for local self-expression addressed to each community's needs and interests. You can form your own judgment on at least two of these criteria and whether today's authorized radio services fulfill more than one of the three. The 1980 report and order reflects to some degree the changes in the broadcast industry, but at the same time, the FCC was still welded to the concept that AM was the only effective nighttime radio service. Curiously, this AM-only reasoning was being written by the same FCC staff that at the same time was drafting FM Docket 8090 that exploded the FM band. This leads one to speculate on the real reasons for the final AM orders. As with many other allocation decisions by the FCC, the breakdown of the clears was done in large part, in their words, in the name of diversity. The FCC would soon define minority-owned operations, and they suggested the clear channel breakup and future expansion dockets, they were thinking of Docket 8090 FM, would solve the dilemma of minority access to broadcast outlets. We know today how successful that thinking was. In explaining the duplication of the remaining clears, the FCC said the rising demand for services could be met by other proposed changes, but they also argued that they just didn't have time to wait. The other proposed changes, they alluded to, would include not only FM Docket 8090 waiting in the wings, but also the expanded band proceeding and an NTIA government initiative to put the entire Western Hemisphere on 9 kilohertz spacing. And in a matter of months, the FCC would also consider expanding the hours of the daytimers. In reviewing the disposition of the Clear Channel matter, we need to pose some questions. Did the FCC solution actually provide better nighttime radio service? Or did existing and planned FM coverage make the issue irrelevant, even as the final report and order was being written? The Canadians seem to think so. Or should the FCC have adopted the original superpower plan to deliver at least 4 dependable Skywave services available to everyone? It's tempting to speculate, and hindsight is wonderful, especially in view of the impact of new satellite-delivered national radio services. Clearly, under the FCC's three-legged stool criteria, the concept of superpower on a few stations never had legs, to pardon the pun. But did the FCC's actions really promote diversity? Given what most of these secondary radio stations are doing today, cloning each other with satellite-fed programming, we would leave that to their listeners to decide. So what, after all, was it all about? The Clear Channel matter, for half a century, may have been a story of a few haves versus a greater number of have-nots. If that was the case, it would be tempting to view those AM giants as victims. But the argument might also be made that some 1A stations abdicated their protection by pulling back their former wide area service, concentrating instead on their ratings-defined metro areas. I would suggest that while some stations might plead guilty to that strategy, others do continue to this day to be attuned to the needs of their extended service areas, but not much beyond the metro. And that's what makes this next question so interesting. What will happen when the AMs adopt IBOC, a digital system that even their proponents admit will match the groundwave coverage at night and throw away the skywave? At that point, if true, should the 1A stations be given identical day and night protection, matching their demonstrated digital groundwave coverage? That would certainly shrink the coverage and allow more stations on the band. What an interesting business. Well, this is Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service, and that's the end of our six-part series, The Clear Channel Matter. We hope you enjoyed, and we hope you learned from it. We'll be back next month with another Clear Channel band scan. Until then, good listening, DXers. Time now to take a look at sports. Here's Ken Honestchuck.
Hello again, DXers. Ken Honestchuck here, October 2005 edition, and let me get you more a complete report this time. In the National Hockey League, which is taking their first season after taking last year off, I got a pretty complete idea of where you're going to hear things. The Anaheim Mighty Ducks will go to Mexico. 1090 XPRS with Steve Carroll only play-by-play. The Edmonton Oilers on 630 CHED like last time. Rod Phillips and Morley Scott. The Atlanta Flashers on Powerhouse 680 WCNN, five-year deal, 23-station network, with Dan Kamal, Billy Jaffe. The Boston Bruins, another powerhouse, 1030 WBZ, Dave Goucher, Bob Beers, and three stations. The Buffalo Sabres have moved to a mean signal, 550 WGR, but no announcers available. The Calgary Flames are on the Fan, 960 CFAC, no announcers available. The Raleigh, North Carolina, Carolina Hurricanes, they call themselves, 570 WDTF in Raleigh, 1011 WKXU Burlington, 1023 WKIX in Goldsboro. And if you're inside the arena there, you listen to the game on 87.7 with Chuck Caton and John Forslund. Chicago Blackhawks, 670 WSCR. With Pat Foley and Troy Murray. The Denver, Colorado Avalanche on 950 KKFN and 23 stations with Mike Haynes and Norm Jones. The Columbus, Ohio Blue Jackets, 1460 WBNS and 1011 WWCD with George Matthews and Bill Davidge. The Dallas Mavericks have signed a new contract on 820 WBAP for the 11th year with Ralph Strangis and Daryl Rio. Ralph was hurt in a car accident in late September, so Josh Lewin will fill in when Ralph can't make it. The Detroit Red Wings on 1270 WXYT and 25 stations with Ken Call and Paul Woods. The Miami, Florida Panthers on 560 WQAM, Randy Mahler and Steve Goldstein. Los Angeles Kings, 710 KSPN and 11 others with Nick Nixon and Darrell Evans. The Minnesota Wild, yes, the Wild. 830 WCCO, 950 K, whatever it is, back up. They changed their call so much. And the Spanish station, 107.5 KBGY, will do 20 of them. English, Bob Kurtz and Tom Reed. The Montreal Canadiens told me they're on 800 CJAD in English. The Nashville Predators, 104.5 WGFX and 560 WNSR with Pete Weber and Terry Crisp. The New Jersey Devils, 660 WFAN, Tim, with John Hennessy and Randy Velashek. New York Islanders, 1130 WBBR, with John Windeman and Chris King. New York Rangers on 1050 WEPN, and some games on WABC with Ken Albert. That takes care of the big stations in New York.
Flip over your tape, and Ken will be back with more of the Sports Networks.